Welcome back to another episode of our Clean Sailors podcast. I'm your host, Holly, founder of Clean Sailors. Let's get started. Doyle Sails are one of the most competitive sailmakers on the planet. They are also the official sailmaker to SailGP. It doesn't get much cooler than that, in my opinion. Now, the health of our oceans and general environment plays a role in how Doyle thinks about sustainability. And today I'm joined by Harry Wren, Doyle's global brand and operations manager based in New Zealand, to discuss this very topic. Hi, Harry. Thank you for joining me pretty early in your morning.
Thank you very much for having me. Yes, it's 7:50 now here. As my days usually start this early because Europe is awake at still, so we have to do a lot with them and our teams over there, so kind of normal.
Very fair, and you've got a lot going on at the moment, hey?
Yeah, so we're very busy down here in New Zealand and globally. Our teams, they would have been in here probably 2 hours before I was, and our Stratus membrane factory now runs 24/7, so it's a busy building that I sit in.
Wow, that's incredible, 24/7. I mean, that's just basically to meet the demands of Doyle, right?
Yeah, that's to meet the demand for Stratus and Doyle Sails globally now.
That's incredible. That feels like a lot of responsibility pressure, but also incredibly exciting as a point for the brand. What is exactly your role with Doyle, and how long have you been with the company?
I've been with Doyle for 3 years now. So I sit under the brand and operations of the global team. There's only three of us. We're a small team. So my role does encompass anything from looking after our loft network and checking that the brand's been used correctly across all collateral. Our lofts are obviously under a franchise, so we provide them marketing, operational, branding, and the sustainability support. So it's making sure that the resource that we have here in New Zealand as part of the global team can feed down into those smaller lofts, and they see value in being a Doyle sailmaker beyond the logo on their sails.
And considering this through for you, that is slightly nuts, Harry, but obviously very impressive as well. And what are some of the coolest projects and appreciate classes and boats that Doyle is working with at the moment and that you're involved in your opinion? Because I appreciate, for me right now, I'm just buzzing SailGP, but everyone has a slightly different take, and being a sailor yourself, you might have your own preference.
We did just have SailGP down here in Auckland, which I had been to the Christchurch event in previous years, but it was pretty cool to have it right on the doorstep and right on the doorstep of my home marina. And it was a pretty short racetrack, and you had to wonder if they were going to be able to turn the boats and not hit anymore, but it was exactly the spectacle that they wanted. We had the biggest grandstand on the end of this property in Auckland that hasn't been utilised. And yeah, it was actually pretty cool to see after I'd previously been like, well, that's okay. That's just going to happen.
The racetrack was not only short, but the conditions too were at times pretty spicy. So it really made the spectatorship. It was wonderful. But that must have been, how did that feel also for you as a team, having obviously SailGP, which is effectively like your class, right on your doorstep there? That must have been pretty incredible.
It was, yeah, it was very cool. And yeah, I got to go down to base and see the sails, and the sails obviously sit on our floor here, so you do see them. But we also got a chance to activate our circular luggage project properly in their merchandise store, and the New Zealanders really bought into it, and I think we sold some of the biggest numbers that we ever have.
For those listening who don't know about the circular project, just tell us a little bit more.
So one of our sustainability issues that we have in the sailmaking world, which we will definitely tap into a bit further along, is the end of life of sails. And we, end of 2021, we partnered with our ocean conservation charity, Live Ocean, to create a range of luggage from tote bags to duffel bags and, I guess, toiletry vanity bags out of sailcloth to resell as an end of life upcycling solution.
I bet they sold like hotcakes, Harry.
Yeah, they were pretty good, but turns out 10 Jibs makes a lot of luggage.
I can imagine.
We finally got through our first set, which is an awesome achievement. But yeah, it's not a fast-moving product due to its bespoke price point. And you know, reused or used cloth is not necessarily something that stands out to the wider market past the marine industry.
I hear you. I think, and this is obviously a very, very juicy topic for us to discuss, right? And some of the shifts that might need to take place and how it's actually going so far. But just on that point, even in your tenure with Doyle and even beforehand, in your own experience sailing, et cetera, how have you seen materials and requirements and the sail textile itself changing? Because you obviously work across a variety of different boats and classes and types of sails, and therefore different types of materials. And obviously the industry itself is developing and improving, and tech is enhancing every day. What have been some of the biggest changes that you've seen so far?
I think in the last 3 to 5 years, though, the laminate and membrane sails have been around a lot longer. That next level across the whole industry has happened. So the tech is developing unbelievably fast. The sails are actually getting lighter. There is less material in them. So I'm not sure if we've actually maybe missed the boat on being able to actually go back and measure this, but the actual kilos of product used in a sail 5 to 10 years ago versus now is that a sustainability story in itself.
Wow.
And that would be really interesting to look at across the all the sail makers.
That's fascinating, right? Because obviously it depends. Obviously it's sort of traditional Dacron mainsail like mine. There's only so much, I think, by virtue of how long they last. You wouldn't be tapping into technology on a frequent basis as you would when you've got your Kevlar and highly composite technical racing sails, right? And because of Doyle being at the apex of, well, you've obviously had the partnership with Clarice Kremer, right? That was she chose Doyle for her Vendée Globe as well. So that's, I wouldn't say that's blue water cruising, Harry, but it's a bit more every day than, say, Sail GP. But because you're at the sort of apex of the market in that sense, you're obviously having to innovate as fast as possible because there's so much at stake at this. I mean, you know, the top level like Sail GP, but it's a fascinating concept that I hadn't thought of it that way, that actually the amount of material is getting less just by virtue of the sort of need for high performance, lightweight, but incredibly tough stuff, right?
Yes. I think the interesting part of sustainability still is, unfortunately, the top of the top, which are the ones buying the most sails, using them for one regatta or two, and then being turfed into a container for deliveries or never see the light of day again. Unfortunately, that performance still outbeats sustainability for those certain clients. And it's that top 1%, but they are purchasing the highest quantity, which is why the innovation hasn't quite gone into the sustainable fabrics and sustainable cloth yet, because the demand isn't there in those markets, which are the markets causing the problem of the end of life. Who will buy one sale and use, and they want it to last 10 years. They might even, as you said, that is sustainable in itself. So we're better to not necessarily put that innovation into that realm, because they're already being sustainable and how long they want to use their sail for.
That's honestly, once you say it, it's so obvious, but also it's so important, right? Because the majority of sailors, I mean, if you think about 30 million plus boats on the planet, sailing actually represents about less than 10%, probably 8%. So it's only about 2.5, 2.6, nearly 3 million max boats, sailing boats, right? And of those, you've got this, the high performance, which is a tiny, tiny segment, right? I mean, there are only X number of Sail GP boats on the planet in comparison to, say, blue water cruising boats. And yet this almost more simple Dacron mainsail is a lot easier to potentially deal with, because it is almost just a simpler fabric, right? In comparison, yeah,
you're not dealing with this glued laminate. So the biggest problem we have had when we've tried to come down that how we can break these sails down, the carbon fibers, we have a solution for. Once we've glued it all together and it's laminated so it lasts and doesn't break down in the environment, we can't bring it back and then recycle it in its old form.
And this is obviously something that the whole industry is dealing with, right? It's the sailing industry. It's every single sail maker, every sail loft, every sail cloth manufacturer, importantly, right? It's the whole ecosystem.
Composite. It's, it goes down to the rig manufacturers as well. Everyone is unfortunately, the high performance resin, carbon, and all those developments across the entire industry, to the boat building, to the rigging, is all part of the problem.
I appreciate, obviously, upcycling is one way, and something that we focused on, obviously, with Clean Sailors through our resale platform. And we've got, you know, tens and tens of partners around the world who are looking at upcycling. And there is something, appreciate it, it's not necessarily the ultimate solution. And I appreciate this also is something that Doyle has done, particularly with the Live Ocean sort of circular luggage range. But it does actually help to give this textile another life, right? It's better than putting it in straight into landfill when you may not be able to use it on the boat again, but ultimately it still has integral value as a textile and as a fabric. So why not be doing something else with it? I still think there's a very big argument to say, can we be replacing so much other virgin material that we've been producing on this planet with stuff like end-of-life sail fabric, because it is still so strong.
Oh, and it still is definitely a key part of it, and at the moment one of the only solutions, so we have to do what we can with it. And it's sort of, a lot of it's been trying to engage those partners of SailGP and further beyond just the industry. So there's a lot of non-marine partners in SailGP, and I know we do have one in the process at the moment where it's someone else that wants to have a sustainable story. They like their partnership with SailGP, but they have a massive client and partner base of themselves. So hopefully we're looking at a good portion of our bags going and being gifted to a partner's and clients. So it's a nice story that it's sort of leaving the industry as well, and we've got people outside of marine interested in what we're doing.
And owning in some ways a piece of history, right? Because I think this is, especially with boats like that, you know, they are exceptional, and they're exceptional materials, but these are, you know, races and race courses that go down in history. So it's pretty exceptional in that sense, hey.
Yeah, and there's a lot to tap into with SailGP, because they have a major focus on not just sailors being interested. It's made for TV and a spectacle. So the more buy-in there is from the general public, the more buy-in we can tap into for our sustainability projects.
I think that's why I appreciate at times, and I've faced it several times myself, right, with resale, is that people will question, well, we don't need any more bags or otherwise, but people are always going to need bags because things wear out. It's if it is also a really good, dare I say it, a marketing tool and raising awareness, because it's a product that people can understand and relate to very easily, made out of something that's incredibly hard wearing. But on that topic, Harry, how are Doyle approaching the general challenge of end of life? I appreciate it's a silver bullet kind of question, but how are you working through that topic?
Yeah, I don't think any sailmaker would have the answer to the question, but we've tapped into a lot of little projects in different regions. So I definitely, from when I started and thought, okay, let's find a solution, there's no one solution for a region, a country, an area, even cities. But some of the companies that I've been working with for a couple of years now have said, no more, please stop sending us more. So even these companies that thought they'd found a solution and they were ticking along really nicely, there has been some progress in pulling apart the sails and recycling, even with the laminates and the glues. There's now, the demand's too high. Everyone's cottoned on to that you can get rid of your sails through these guys, and they are, I think, a little bit slammed. So
I think it's honestly, to be candid, the first question that we ask anyone even wanting to join our sort of platform is, can you actually take and use the sails that you're going to get? Because we know the industry, the states, everything, we haven't got any solution anywhere in the world for processing this complicated material in all of its guises, which obviously is never the same. No two sails are the same, really, just by virtue of, you know, one may have been under exceptional UV exposure, another one stretched. There is no kind of commonality in comparison to, say, you know, plastic bottles. And yet there are obviously great people doing great things out there, but the volume, I mean, it's really hard to get any kind of statistics and research, you appreciate, and having spent about 4 years trying to get to the bottom of it, it's really hard to get any clear figures around how many end-of-life sails actually go into landfill every year. But we know this industry alone for sailcloth, new sailcloth, you know, at least $400-500 million a year fresh. So you can then backwork the idea that all of that at some point will be end of life and heading into landfills. Of those nearly 3 million sailing boats we talked about earlier that are pretty active and current, all with sales, at least two each likely. That is all landfillable currently. So yeah, it's a big problem and a big opportunity. And there's too much to go around, ultimately.
Yeah, I think it's interesting this sort of like it's going to end up in landfill. I think in a lot of cases it is just stored. People store and go, oh, that might be useful, or I'll keep the bed ins, or they get loaded into a container that sits in the boatyard. So it would actually be really interesting if you could find out how many sales were not being used and had been classed as done versus how many are actually in landfill.
I think that's a really, really important point, Harry, because the psychology behind putting a sale in landfill is actually quite an uncomfortable one. And a lot of the time people will say, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that we've now got somewhere to take our sales. They've just been sitting in the shed because we didn't want to put them in the bin. And I think the size, obviously, and the fact that they are really complicated, and I think most people know that they don't obviously get recycled. Psychologically, I think most people do feel uncomfortable about landfilling them. You're right. So, but it's a really valid point. I mean, I've been on racing boats and worked with racing teams, and they're like, oh, we've got two containers down on the south coast in the UK if you want to. I'm good, thanks, but good to know. But you must have the same, right? I'm sure Doyle has a hoard itself.
Oh yeah, I think New Zealand, we've had containers and containers of worth that one company wanted to make. They had inflatable bean bags and they wanted to make bags for them. So I gave them probably two jibs and that suffice their New Zealand demand for a bag for 2 years. So, you know, that's one out of the 10 that some guy dropped off because he didn't want to put it in landfill.
I hear you. And I think also just by virtue of the size of them, right? These are compared to a wash bag, compared to a Genoa from a J-class yacht. I mean, you'll be done for decades, let's be honest. What are you perhaps most proud of so far in Doyle's journey? Because like I said, we've talked about it very openly. There isn't a solution at the moment for recycling end of life sales or turning them back into anything other than completely other products, usually household products. But what are you most proud about that Doyle is looking at and thinking about as a team and a small team, obviously with massive reach?
We've been very careful from the start. The guys did actually sort of start the sustainability journey before I was here, but I was the first time there was a dedicated person for it. So I didn't come from a background of sustainability at all. So I've been learning on the go, which has been really interesting. And I think our biggest thing has been the small or low-hanging fruit may not seem like big changes, but doing lots of them all the time keeps the momentum, especially in the factory. That gets the buy-in from the rest of our team, which is super important for wanting to make change. We used to do 2,500 square meters of Stratus a week. We're up to about 3,500 at the moment. Every time a bit of surface was laid, there was a blue backing sheet on it. So that was a not sticky, not glue, DPE plastic liner. And that was going straight into our skip bins here when I started. And now they take away probably 400 kilos a month of that. And it gets recycled into fence posts, pallets, conduit for cables. And that all is just in New Zealand, which is pretty cool.
Hey, that is massive. I mean, given the volume that you're talking about there.
Volume on a very light product. So 400 kilos.
Yes.
A lot of plastic. So that was
in cling film tons, you know, like literally like cooking cling film, but 400 tons of that. I mean, that's so cool.
Yeah. So that was probably one of our majors in the factory here. Then when I started, we had paper cups in the lunchroom because there wasn't enough mugs. So we put another dishwasher in, we bought more mugs, and we went from 20,000 paper cups a year to zero. And there was a bit of pushback, and then one day we just didn't press order, and no one has worried about it since.
Sometimes that's the only way, isn't it?
Yeah. Too much pushback. And I was like, I don't want to hear about it. Just pick up a mug, you'll be okay.
That is I think it's a really potent almost way of describing, like, I think our mentality about most stuff. I think as long as something is still available, it's really hard to fully eke yourself off something. Sometimes you just got to stop the supply. It's gone. It's not happening anymore. And it does make me wonder how in this kind of, in our arena, in our sailing industry, what will it how will those shifts happen? Sometimes it is just a, you know, from one day to the next, something just isn't there anymore or isn't available or isn't allowed. And actually, we just then all have to start doing something differently. I'm not saying it's easy or necessarily the right way at times. I think for paper cups, totally the right decision. Good job. But psychologically, it says a lot, doesn't it, about us as human beings?
And that's just something that we then announced to our loft network that New Zealand had gone away from any paper or disposable cutlery in the lunchroom. And I haven't necessarily gone back and asked the question of the 50 lofts if they've done the same, but it's a lead by example. It's nice to do. It's very easy for me to implement that when I sit in the same office, and we just have to try and make sure we communicate it internally to our teams globally and they can follow what we're doing, and that's the support we can provide for them.
It's one of the first things that you said, actually, that I made a mental note of, was that actually your lofts are almost an extension of you, obviously, of Doyle, even if it is a franchise kind of model. And them being almost as proud to be Doyle as you are, beyond having the mark on the sales, is a big deal, right? And I can imagine that most will be following suit from you guys, because it is a global reputation, even if it is 50 plus different sale lofts all in different locations, speaking different languages and completely different cultures at times, right? It is a global brand, effectively.
All our ethos that come into buy sailors for sailors, our people are the most important thing, and we do spend a lot of time spotlighting our Superyacht Grand Prix sailors and the impacts they have on their projects and the results. Those people are also our loft owners and the teams that I talk to every day. So
that's very cool. That's also awesome legacy and heritage in that sense. Hey, I think I was chatting to a team earlier, and one of them was sort of encouraging, you know, we've got to get more people into sailmaking. But you well know that you don't have a university degree in sailmaking. There isn't a, you just learn by either being a sailor or by doing an apprenticeship or just getting stuck in a sail loft, right? I mean, it's born really out of passion for something as opposed to any kind of formal qualification.
Yeah, we have an apprenticeship program here in New Zealand, and a lot of the lofts do in their respective countries as well. And that's, you know, that's also a key part of sustainability, that I make sure we don't always just talk about the environmental. The sustainability of our people is just as important as our economic sustainability. And the bottom line is why we can keep going and then therefore keep pushing our legacy into the environmental and socio part of our business and retaining those people. We've had a lot of sailmakers here in New Zealand that did start as apprentices when they were 16, 17. One just went and did an America's Cup campaign for a team, and then now he's come back because he wanted to tick that off as a bucket list item in his career, but Doyle's called his name back and that's what he wanted to do. So it's pretty cool to have those people want to come back, and they come back with a whole new light and something they can bring back to our team here as well.
Yeah, incredible experience with that one in particular to bring home. Hey.
Yeah, it's very cool. So yeah, the people is a key part of why this works.
And what are some of, you mentioned, just to go back to the sale offs again, right? What are some of the almost like either the stories or the happenings or the milestones or the achievements that you've heard of the Doyle Network that have taken place, no matter how big or how small, sustainability, environment or social related, whatever you choose?
Our Barbados sailmaking loft, which does a lot of manufacture for our United States loft, they are 100% solar powered in the Caribbean. So that was a pretty cool, I think, one of the first globally. Maybe like in across the industry that was solar panel.
Fantastic. The clue is it being in the Caribbean, Harry. I mean, we couldn't have done that here.
Yeah. Sorry, the UK probably can't quite rely on solar.
I'm sure you can all year round either, actually.
Our grid is 80% renewable energy. So New Zealand's grid runs on hydro and geothermal, and that last 20% you can pick up from solar panels. So that's definitely something that's a bit of a work in progress here.
Yeah,
we can actually choose electricity providers here and only use renewable.
It's incredibly impressive, and my proverbial tail is between my legs, because what started as a slight joke is definitely, yeah, we may be a little bit far behind in comparison up north. As you see for Doyle, I think, you know, naturally you've got that live ocean relationship as well with Blair and Pete. I mean, there's something incredibly homegrown about everything that you're doing, despite being that kind of, you know, global company with 50 plus sail lofts around the world.
Yeah, so we may not be New Zealand owned anymore, but we're still very proud to be New Zealand operated, and everyone's hearts are still in the right place in that way. And the connections here in New Zealand and those New Zealand connections that are dotted across the globe are super important to everyone here.
I'm pleased to hear it. And it's a great sailing nation, let's be honest, a great racing nation. I'll be choosy with my words there because I don't want to upset my fellow Brits. How does that actually change things? What are some of the most exciting elements brought about by now being in a much bigger network of sailmakers globally, let's say?
So the acquisition of Doyle's by North Technology Group, we are still our own brand. We will be still competing for market share between the other two, but it has also opened up a massive opportunity to tap into resources, whether that is manufacturing, which is, you know, by association will decrease shipping. It will decrease that footprint on manufacturing of components globally because it's all been done in one place. And then drop ship to the right place rather than it all being double handed. But then for me personally, one of the most exciting things is that I now meet monthly with all the sustainability managers across the group. So that includes Southern Spars, North's Kiteboarding, North Sails, Quantum Sails. And we get to sit on a Zoom with everyone in a different time zone and talk about our achievements, our challenges, share contacts and info. And it's really nice to have people understanding what the challenges that we're all going through, and there's no competitive nature in that world. We've got a problem to solve. We're all part of the problem. And yeah, there's a lot of resource to use and opportunity.
That's incredibly powerful, isn't it? I can't really off the top of my head think of any other industries where you've got that complete kind of opportunity, let's say, to bring all of your different legacies, brand strengths together in ultimately your different businesses and can compete with each other, but ultimately in a way which you have got a single global opportunity, and that is to bring together some of the best minds of the planet, all of the best minds of sail making on the planet, really, in some respects, on some of the biggest opportunities and topics of our time.
Yeah, it's been a really, really cool opportunity to have these people to talk to.
That's fantastic. I'm really pleased to hear. I can see how that would be transformative, honestly. What do you, when we're talking about challenges, whether it's for Doyle specifically or as a group of sailmakers globally, what do you think some of the biggest challenges then are? Obviously, we've touched on, you know, the end of life sales and stuff, but what would be your top three, you reckon?
I think the, wherever the sort of change is going to be, where sustainability is going to outweigh performance, is going to be a really important line to get right. And when that happens, at some point, as regulations come into place, I know there's been a lot more in the EU, and this sort of continuation of what level of green things need to be, it's very easy to look at packaging requirements and try and decrease your plastic there. But when it actually comes down to what our product is and where that can get, as taxes will go up on all of that, we've got to make sure we're ahead of the game before all of that comes in.
Interestingly, you said when sustainability outweighs performance. I think for the consumer, it probably never will, because ultimately, if you have a boat or you're a sailor and you're going to, you know, buy new sails or have them even repaired and upgraded and whatever else, you will always want them to perform. Sustainability ranks highly and it's increasingly high, but ultimately, it will be, as you said, it will be the legislation around textile, around sailcloth, you know, producer responsibility, which will change the game for all of you, all of us as an industry as a whole.
Yes, it's going to be getting that right and making sure you're not on the back foot, because that could end up that you can't sell into a particular market, or you know, your taxes on that product is so much higher that you're not a competitive price to import. So we have to be, especially still producing here in New Zealand, we have to be very careful to make sure we're ahead on the EU and the US requirements. It's a bit of a watch this space, and we'll see what the next 5-10 years bring.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, ironically, there's a lot of work being done in the EU and some really good sort of there's some good legislation regulation that's already kind of kicked off. Other countries, France in particular, are moving pretty swiftly with it, particularly when it comes to things like boat building. So obviously the first owner now of a vessel effectively is subject to a tax, which is end of life, which is kind of the fairest model in that if you're buying a boat, you're bringing it into fruition for the first time. And by the time you're the third or fourth owner, it's not worth very much. Usually you wouldn't really reasonably be the person to sort of shoulder the tax burden of end of life material. But sales just is such a unique thing because it falls between two different areas. I mean, it's a textile is what sailcloth's been classed as, but obviously it's in the sailing and the marine industry. And it's been in some ways not meddled with, but adapted in so many different guises with the laminates and with the bonding and the glues, etc., that it's comes out very differently, doesn't it?
That's exactly the problem we're going to face.
Opportunity, hopefully, Harry. Because I think it is, right? I think it's not almost like to you, it's just appreciate that it's one of those things that is seen as an issue. And actually, it is such an opportunity because it is, as you said, it's a material which is retained such hard wearingness and is so highly engineered. I mean, the energy and the engineering and the design over centuries that has gone into this wonderful textile is so cool. And therefore, this is almost like another really big, awesome problem/opportunity to solve for an industry which is obviously renowned for engineering and technology and innovation. So hopefully it should be a really cool thing.
Yeah, hopefully that is the plan.
Hopefully. What are you most looking forward to? Like, what are some of the stuff that you've got planned either in your role for Doyle as a whole or now as part of the wider group? And you can say SailGP, but we don't have to focus on that all the time.
We're kind of re-looking at what our overall sustainability strategy is. I'm excited that the coming into the group means we have more resource in terms of people around us, but that actually is also capital resource. That means we can put some more cash into some projects. And a lot of what needs to be done is research and development, and that does cost money that previously wasn't really available.
Sure.
It's going to be good to be able to tap into that and put together some projects and hopefully makes some good differences.
I think that's a really, really important point about the R&D that has to go into anything new. It's not something that just gets thought up, and especially when you're looking at global opportunities now as a global sail making group, that brings a lot of extras in that sense to be able to plow into designing the future as much as responding to it. Harry Wren, Doyle's Global Brand and Operations Manager, thank you so much for joining. I can't wait to see how this pans out for Doyle in the next couple of years in particular.
Thank you very much for having me. It was great to chat all things sustainability with you.
For more about Clean Sailors and our projects, just head to cleansailors.com. Thanks for listening and see you for the next episode.